Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We had a little hiccup there during the break. Hopefully it won't happen again. Now, this is the story that I had promised to share. But first, since we still have Glenn on the line, Glenn, we're talking about Christopher Columbus's flagship.
Yeah.
It's called the Santa Maria. You know what Santa Maria stands for, what it means?
Saint Mary.
Right, right. And, of course, Catholics, this was the Spanish Catholic queen and king that sent him. They claim that Mary is the queen of heaven, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've been reading both Zechariah and Isaiah and Zechariah, Yirmiyah, I should say, and Zechariah. And the thing that God, you know, he lists the reasons that he doesn't much like Babylon. And is going to destroy it. And that he also says that he's going to have to chastise his own people to get their attention. Is that both were... Yeah, both were worshiping the Queen of Heaven. And,
well, yeah, he was pretty emphatic about the fact that they shouldn't be baking cakes for the Queen of Heaven in secret.
Absolutely, yeah. And he says, beyond the secret cakes that you're baking for the Queen of Heaven, you're also offering libations. It's very much like the Roman Catholic Eucharist is what he's describing. And he just says, you know, there is no Queen of Heaven. You know, it's an absolute myth, and I view this as an abomination. And so the Roman Catholic Church and Orthodox Christianity continues to do it. But that was the name of the ship, is the Santa Maria, which means Saint Mary. According to God, there are no saints. And Mary is neither the Mother of God nor the Queen of Heaven. This is the story that I said I wanted to share with you.
Can I do one thing before you do that?
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, sure, sure. You were talking about the finances and the records of these ISIS people. Nothing says legitimacy like a bean counter with a spreadsheet. And, the West loves documentation. And if it's on paper, it must be legit, right? Especially if it's pretentious sounding.
But particularly if there's 1.6 billion beans on that piece of paper. That's a lot of beans.
And the plot thickens. You talk about Petraeus. Well, he was taken out of his position as head of the CIA, but he's by no means on the sidelines. These guys go back and forth between government and corporate, and he's newly hired by an investment firm, KKR, in sort of a consulting capacity to, you know, help him assess, you know, risk and investment potential in emerging markets and stuff. And he had twisted the arm of Boeing and GE to go back into Iraq to rebuild their power plants, some of which they did. But that sort of is the formalized rollout that's out at KKR. So since he's working for an investment firm and these guys have spreadsheets, well, geez, it's a marriage made in heaven, right?
Yeah, what's amazing is that he's still revered for his surge program and his awakening program. And it is the surge and the awakening that has led to the mess that we're witnessing right now. It's the cause of the problem. And the guys that cause the problem are never held accountable in America anymore. It's America has lost the ability to understand cause and effect and to hold itself and its generals accountable. It's one of the things occasionally I get in a spiff with IQ, Al Rasuli, where you know, he wants to point out that that the military are just following orders. It's the politicians' problem. It's not the military's problem. That's not true. Military leadership is absolutely as culpable as are the politicians that are driving them. Petraeus was not a politician. He was a general. And he and Bremer, who was not only state, but he was appointed head of the military in Iraq. And he was governed as under a military tribunal. The military is equally culpable.
Yeah, well, now he's sort of stepping into Brzezinski's old shoes in terms of the liaison with the and all that sort of thing, you know.
Oh, yeah, and Brzezinski was so good at it because, you know, he got us to deploy about $5 billion worth of advanced weaponry and cash to rent the Taliban and then Al-Qaeda from Pakistan to wage a proxy war against the Soviet-backed government of Afghanistan. And that turned out so well that it killed a couple of million Afghanis and led directly not only to 9/11, but the assault of Sunni Islamic terrorists around the globe, and Russia and Spain and the UK, really throughout the world. He brought that disaster upon us. And reengaging in Iraq is going to do exactly the same thing, except this time the fight isn't between a tiny secular government and some Sunni militants. This is the great jihad, to forever seal the deal between who is going to rule Islam, Sunni or Shia. And the consequence of this is vastly more grievous than anything we have ever encountered before.
And if this thing spreads into Iran, that'll be, you know, if this thing could overthrow Iran, you know, that would be like the final foot for the Sunni, you know.
Here's the deal. I mean, ISIS, and even with the generals from Saddam's armies, even with the Sunni tribal warlords, even with their great recruiting, and they are spectacular recruiting, even with their great wealth and all of their weapons now and their military victories, it will be very difficult for ISIS to take Baghdad, because right. It is so well defended by Sunni Shia Mujahideen. So taking Baghdad is going to be very difficult for them. And they don't need to take Baghdad to prevail. All they have to do is surround it, which they have done. And they've already achieved victory. I do not think that that ISIS or the Sunnis that are former military officers who are leagued with them now will want to start an Iran-Iraq war again. That didn't turn out well for either side. So I don't see that happening. But here's the issue, though, that it is highly troublesome, is that Qatar wants it to happen, and they're the arms merchant of the world. Saudi Arabia wants it to happen. Kuwait wants it to happen. Turkey wants it to happen. Egypt wants it to happen. And so you do have large militaries in the Islamic world in that region who have a desire for that to happen. They all realize that the opportunity for the Sunnis to overthrow the Shiites in Iran is limited, because once the Shias in Iran have an arsenal of more than one nuclear bomb, then they can no longer prevail against them. The bomb makes them immune to being overthrown. Their time limit is short.
Even so, this should give Israel pause as to, you know, where this is all going, because as the sands shift, you know, the Sunni threat to them could be actually become greater than their perceived threat from Iran.
It's a mixed bag for Israel, and the reason it's a mixed bag for Israel is that while Muslims are killing Muslims, Muslims aren't killing Jews.
Exactly.
And so while Team Islam squanders the resources they have purchased from the United States killing one another, they're not aiming those resources at Israel. And while the world has to deal with ISIS and Syria and Iraq, it's not in a position where it can put its thumb down and squish Israel, which is what they wanted to do as recently as 6 months ago, forcing Israel to capitulate most of its territory. So from that point of view, it is a good thing. It buys Israel time, it weakens Israel's foes, and it gets the world off Israel's case. But this is the long-term problem is, of course, more serious, which is that it increases the motivation of Iran to complete the bomb, which is why Iran is now digging at its heels in Europe and saying, no, we're not giving up any centrifuges, we're not giving up any facilities, we're not taking a step back from where we were. But we do appreciate, though, you lifting all the sanctions, because now we're rolling in money. But no, we're not doing that, because they know now they're motivated where their life literally depends on developing the bomb. So Israel is concerned about that. Israel is also concerned that while Americans don't seem to be able to look at cause and consequence, I am certain that they have figured out in Israel that the last time the world played this game was in Afghanistan in the late 1970s, 80s, and through the early 1990s. And that once successful in the Great Jihad, the Sunni Muslims returned to their countries and perpetrated heinous terrorist acts in Russia, throughout Europe, South America, China, and the United States. And they know exactly what's going to happen when the Sunnis prevail over the Shias in this Great Jihad, that will, for the first time, unify them, and they will, as a multitude of Muslims, are going to fulfill the prophecies in Yeshaya, Isaiah 17. The Israelis know that. And so they know that this whole region has become a wash in war materials with the United States supplying both sides. So they know long term it's a disaster for them. Short term it's a benefit for them.
Right. So right now the actual fragmentation and infighting, the internecine rivalry, is to Israel's advantage for the moment. But one last speculation. If in terms of things that are holding things back, we talk about the millions and hundreds of thousands, but just in terms of a few significant individuals. If Assad, al-Maliki, and Putin were abducted by aliens tomorrow, in what direction might all this stuff accelerate? That's a truly frightening prospect.
You know, what's amazing is that as focused as the United States was at throwing $25 billion at the belligerent Ukrainians, And throwing Russia off every international board and whipping them with dollar bills. You don't hear a whole lot about that anymore. And right now, the Ukraine is in a far worse shape than it's ever been. There literally hundreds are dying in the battles now on both sides. But you don't hear about that anymore. So we have bigger fish to fry and a bigger emergency than the Ukraine. And we were really, really focused on Israel, trying to get Israel to capitulate and give up the West Bank, which would make Israel immediately susceptible to invasion. And you don't hear a lot about that. We're not tongue-lashing China at the moment. So we have changed our tune considerably now that we've made such a mess in Iraq. We'll be back on June 12th, only 2 days after capturing Mosul and other territories, of course, throughout western and northern Iraq. The Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, issued a decree ordering people to send their unmarried women to jihad by sex. Yes, it's jihad by sex. In the proclamation, ISIS threatens to impose Sharia law on all who fail to comply with the decree. Well, in actuality, they're imposing Sharia law on everyone, whether they comply or don't comply with the decree. It's just that they're going to punish those using Sharia law who don't send their daughters to be raped. Here's a translation of the decree. It begins, "In the name of Allah, the Merciful." By the way, last night I watched CBS's primary news program. I'll think of it here in a moment. But CBS was focusing on the treatment of the cops in Egypt. And since the time that the Muslim Brotherhood has been relegated to the sidelines and the Sisi military coup has occurred, the cops have been targeted, murdered in great numbers. Their daughters have been raped, and most all of their churches have been burned to the ground. And there's all sorts of video with these churches being burned to the ground by angry mobs of Muslims. And the Muslims are shouting, "Allahu Akbar," as they tear the crosses off the top of the churches. And they break down the doors, and then they go inside, and they steal everything that has any value, and then they torch them. and the idiot news reporter was saying that they were saying God is great, as if they have never heard that Allah is a name. It means Allah is greater. In the name of Allah, the merciful. Merciful. A merciful rapist. Oh, why not? This is the subject line is the mandate. They then have the logo off to the right of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. And then they say the state of Nineveh. In the name of Allah, the merciful. After liberation of the state of Nineveh, Nineveh was the original capital of ancient Babylon that became the capital of Assyria. Nineveh is now a large province and a city in northern Iraq. After liberation of the state of Nineveh, and the welcome shown by the people of the state to their brotherly Mujahideen. And after the great conquest and the defeat of the Safavid troops. Safavid speaks of the Persian dynasty, therefore talking about the Iranians and therefore Shia Muslims. But the defeat of the Safavid troops in the state of Nineveh and its liberation, and Allah willing, it will become the headquarters for the Mujahideen. Therefore, we request that the people of this state offer their unmarried women so that they can fill their duty of jihad by sex to their brotherly Mujahideen. Failure to comply with this mandate will result in the enforcing of the laws of Sharia upon them. Allah, we have notified. Allah bears witness. Saban, 13, 1435, June 12th, 2014. You see the different Islamic calendar. They are to their duty. All unmarried women. And Nineveh, by the way, is the place where they have the highest percentage of remaining Assyrian Christians. That's where the only surviving of Christians in Iraq is in Nineveh. The Christian girls are now being forced into sexual slavery. Sex by jihad to the Mujahideen, to the Islamic savages that have ravaged that country. And this isn't just ordinary rape. This is religiously sanctioned rape. These are Islamic fundamentalists raping their victims. Religiously sanctified rape. Therefore, we request that the people of this state offer their unmarried women so that they can fulfill their duty of jihad by sex to the Mujahideen. Failure to comply with this mandate will result in enforcing the laws of Sharia upon them. You have no choice. The consequences, you can be raped, or you can die. And death would not be quick. In this case, death would be hundreds of lashings and then stoning. Public humiliation. And you'd be raped before it anyway.
Without a thought to unwanted pregnancy or sexually transmitted disease.
I don't care.
Yep. Barbarians at the gate.
Yes. This is the nature of Islam. A friend of mine sent me this, and he said, would you be willing to do radio shows on this? And he says, could this be true? Is this an accurate translation of the decree? The decree, I've got a copy of it in Arabic. And yes, it is. And I said, sure, I'll do another few thousand radio shows on the the hideous nature of the Islamic religion, but really, no one cares. This was my response. It's true. Iraqi women are being religiously raped. But don't blame this on ISIS. And don't think that ISIS is worse than those they are fighting. It's been happening around the world for 1,400 years. Rape is ordained in the Quran. Muhammad was a rapist. So rape is allowed, even encouraged in Sharia law. That is why the rapist is seldom, if ever, punished, while the victim is lashed and then killed. Without the incentive of rape, Islam would not exist today. Muhammad used it to inspire 75 terrorist raids, the various raids that enabled the Islamic era. Rape is an integral part of Islam. Rape is Islamic Sunnah. And Sunnah is the word from which Sunni, as in Sunni Muslim, is derived. Because Muhammad murdered the men he terrorized, because Muhammad enslaved the children and raped the women, it is the example Muslims are told to follow in the Quran. Nothing has changed in Islam between then and now. This is all clearly stated in the Quran and Hadith. So no one should be surprised. You shouldn't be asking me, is this true?
Yes, but this cannot be rebuffed without using the I word, or the M word, or the K word, and you're not allowed to do that.
Of course. More women have been raped in the Syrian civil war than murdered. Thousands of Copt Christians have been kidnapped and used as sex slaves since General Sisi took over. 98% of Egyptian women report that they have been sexually abused. 250 million Muslim girls living today have been sexually mutilated by their mothers. What do you think is being done every day to the 300 Christian girls kidnapped by Boko Haram in Nigeria? Tens of thousands of Muslim girls are murdered every year by their fathers in honor killings. Women have no rights in Islam. They are sex objects, nothing more. In Saudi Arabia, Muslim women are not allowed outside of their homes. And inside of their homes, they torture the women who have been enslaved to care for them. Now, that's true. The Romans used rape as a weapon of war. So did the Japanese in World War II. In the West, per capita, women are more often abused in the U.S. military than any other place. 99% of the military perpetrators are not prosecuted. So the problem, while ubiquitous in Islam, isn't unique to Islam. It's just that in Islam, rape is approved, considered a religious mandate, while in most other societies and situations, rape is considered bad.
Would that we were facing only Hannibal, or the Vandals, or the Scythians. Something nice and clean-cut and simple like that, you know?
Yeah, if only. IQ al-Rasuli, who is an Iraqi, states that 90% of Christians in Iraq have either fled or as exiles or been killed since the initial U.S. invasions of Iraq. It is one of the many reasons that the U.S. invasion was counterproductive. It was stupid. It was suicidal. It was immoral. Yeah, speaking of immoral, when you bring up the Vandals and the Carthaginians and the Scythians and the like that the Romans thought were barbarians, the fact is that with the potential exception of the Carthaginians, there were in almost every encounter between the Goths and the Visigoths, for example, the legions of Rome and the Roman citizens were vastly more barbarian, they were more savage, than any of the people that they referred to as barbarians. It's very much like the European conquest of North America. those that were calling the indigenous people savages were far more savage than were the native peoples.
Which makes me wonder, where are the American feminists on all this? Because they love abortion, and you know, they'll stand against anything Christian or something like that. But boy, for some reason, where they're remarkably absent,
totally silent. Yeah, 250 million Muslim girls mutilated by their mothers, and they're silent. I've been saying this now for 12 years. No one is listening. The nation and much of the world has been so negatively affected by political correctness, most people are no longer judgmental and thus have become amoral, even senseless. In fact, most people will react foolishly to this story, believing that it justifies the U.S. re-engaging in Iraq, when that's only going to make this situation worse. There is a bigger story here than the religion sanctioning rape. And that is, why doesn't anyone seem to understand cause and consequence? Why is everyone afraid to associate rape and terror with Islam? And related to this, since the U.S. enabled this disaster in Iraq and in Syria, as well as in Libya and Nigeria, this firestorm of death and destruction that cannot be stopped, and one that will spread worldwide, why do we pretend that our military is making us safer, even freer? Why do Americans believe that they are a force for good? Yes, I'm willing to do thousands more interviews on this, but the hosts and their listeners aren't going to like what I have to say. The fact is, we are the problem. We don't think. We don't care. We act in a suicidal fashion like lemmings. And now it's too late. The Islamic terror we are witnessing in Iraq and Syria and Libya and Nigeria is unstoppable. And over the next 15 to 20 years, it's going to ravage the entire world. No one is safe. Armies are useless against it. They only make it worse.
I was going to point that out specifically relative to Israel. As this builds into the tidal wave that's forming, Israel's not going to be able to rely on the stealth of the Mossad or the power of the IDF or German Dolphin submarines or American cruise missiles or Iron Dome or Patriot missiles or theater air defense. They're going to have one avenue of recourse, and that's to go, you know, back to Yahweh.
That is it, because these Muslims now, as a worldwide Mujahideen jihad campaign, are going to eventually flood into Israel like bubonic plagued rats. There aren't enough bullets, there aren't enough missiles, there aren't enough airplanes, there aren't enough tanks to stop them. Not even remotely enough. Militaries cannot effectively, can't even in any way, stop an avalanche of evil like this. And so it's going to spread, and it's going to terrorize the world. I went on to write my friend who sent me this and wanted me to do many more interviews. I said, there is no chance that I'm wrong about this. I've been wrong about many things, but not this. I know Islam as well as anyone on the planet. Islam cannot be reformed. Rape and terrorism are germane to the religion, as are deception, destruction, and death. Muslim jihadists are now very well funded and extraordinarily well armed. They will never change. The world is witnessing in Iraq what is going to continue unabated, and it's going to spread. This is exactly what happened the last time America made this mistake and used the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in a proxy war in Afghanistan against the old USSR. After winning the Great Jihad, the surviving Mujahideen perpetrated the worst terrorist acts the world had ever witnessed in the U.S., Europe, Russia, China, Africa, and South America. And this proxy war in Greater Syria, Syria does begin with an S, not an L, between the Sunni and the Shia Muslims is the ultimate jihad. This is a million times more compelling for Muslims than Afghanistan in the 1980s. Moreover, this is exactly what Yahweh predicted in Yahshua 17 and 18, naming the battlefield in Syria and in Iraq, naming the belligerents, including the United States, delineating the tactics, especially terrorism, ascribing the timing to the last days, and presenting the sequence of events while revealing the ultimate consequence of it all. It's all spelled out for us. Glenn, I'd love your take on all of this, and we will return after the break. There's a little more that I had to say in my response to my friend that wanted me to go on radio shows and talk about religiously inspired rape. But I don't think it'll do any good. I don't think anyone cares. By ignoring the religion of Islam and worse, by praising it, funding it, and arming it, as Americans are doing, by ignoring what it represents, America is repeating their own disastrous history. And by disregarding Yahweh's testimony regarding Greater Syria and the war that would be fought there in the last days, as well as America's arrogance in the region, we're not just shooting ourselves in the foot. We have shot ourselves between the eyes. We are now blind, dumb, and comatose as a nation. Death is on our doorstep. And we have no one to blame but ourselves. Those whose eyes, and go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, and this didn't happen overnight. Since the early 20th century Rockefeller-sponsored flood of liberalism and nominalism through the National and World Councils of Churches, Americans have naively come to believe that religion is largely a matter of hollow words or social context-providing organizations. And they don't understand the real physical world threat posed by Islam, either because they're so naive and dumbed down on this matter. Now, the oligarchical globalist monetarists at the top of the system fully understand the real physical threat, but overestimate their ability to manipulate Islam. They love
that is correct.
All ends against. They overestimate their ability to pull back on the chaos once they've started it. Israel is the other entity that fully understands the physical threat posed by Islam. And yet they, in the face of this, all of the manipulation going on, they're hard-pressed to get a competent ear and anyone empathetic to their cause.
Yeah, I do think that the liberal establishment, which you know, is dominant in academia, and not just dominant, it controls academia. It's homogenous in academia. And the liberal mindset, which is also homogenous and ubiquitous in the media, and is and the influence of political correctness and politics, has the majority of people just bewildered, absolutely ignorant of what God said, ignorant of what Islam is, part of this mindset that renders people incapable of being of exercising good judgment. I do agree that there are a lot of people who are not ignorant, who are malevolent, that are looking to increase their own influence and their own wealth, and that they think that they can use Islam to achieve their ends, and they want to do business with them thinking, and they're so arrogant that they actually think that in the end they can control the beast that they have chosen to ally with. I would agree with you. And the problem there, going from Israel from those two groups to Israel, is that Israel will not ever articulate its concern about Islam. It's illegal to speak out against Islam in Israel. publicly or in the media. Huge fines to do so. And so Israel never vocalizes the realization that Islam is the threat. So there aren't many people willing to do it.
Boy, that is kind of given the fact that they're used to saying things that may not be popular, or you know, speaking out against things. That's almost hard to believe, but I can imagine that it's true.
Yeah, in Israel, it's illegal to speak harshly of Islam. That if you were to, you know, Prophet of Doom is illegal in Israel. What we're doing right now. Yeah, I know. What were they thinking? You know, and the problem of Israel, and Yahweh points this out over and over again in Yirmiyah, Jeremiah, and Yashaya, Isaiah, as well as in Hosea, is that they are so desirous of peace that they will say and do anything. Form alliances with anybody and say and do anything just not to offend people to have peace. And they don't recognize that there is only one source of peace, and compromise never brings it. And so, you know, here's the people that have been harassed by their own doing for millennia. And now they have made it illegal because they are have been so singed by anti-Semitism, by people speaking ill of them and acting upon it, that they won't allow anyone in Israel to speak ill of even their enemy, of Islam. You know, it's tragic.